to administer than states without such requirements.
House Bill 2766 looks back upon the former and current efforts of the Department of Motor Vehicles and state police to deal with the problem of uninsured motorists, and it builds upon that experience. The bill suggests a forward move which I think is practical, though not without some complexity, and which I believe will put a forward step in our attempts to grapple with the problem. I'd like to point out that the issue first came to my attention as a result of persistent, frequent demands coming from a variety of my constituents prior to the session. After coming here and circulating a bill draft, I found a very ready response from our colleagues, who all seemed to agree that this was a situation that demanded attention and that stiffer measures than are presently in place. After some recent discussions with the Department of Motor Vehicles and the State Police, I think I have a reasonably good understanding of some potential problems might be, and I would like to discuss them with you. I'm convinced now that a small amendment should be introduced that would require that an application for a new motor vehicle registration must be accompanied by proof of insurance on the vehicle. Otherwise, we leave a hole there. It is necessary that that information go into the DMV computer with regard to that vehicle. The bill then provides that at such time as insurance on a vehicle is canceled or permitted to lapse, the insurance carrier will be required to report that fact to the Department of Motor Vehicles. The DMV would then notify the owner of the vehicle that it is aware that insurance no longer exists on that vehicle. The owner would then have 30 days in which to come forward to the DMV with proof that new insurance exists, upon which that new information would be entered into the computer and nothing further would happen. If at the end of that 30-day period, however, the department has not been advised and it is satisfied and that the vehicle is insured, then that information that it was an uninsured vehicle would be entered into the computer relative to the status of that vehicle. Now, nothing further happens unless that vehicle comes to the attention of the police either at a traffic stop, the scene of an accident, or for any other reason that a police officer investigates the status of the vehicle. During such an event, if the police officer in checking it out is advised that the vehicle is uninsured, then the vehicle is immediately impounded. The owner would then have 90 days to produce proof of financial responsibility or new insurance in order to obtain a release of the vehicle. After 90 days, if that's not been accomplished, the vehicle is confiscated and sold. Now, I'd like to point out that both the Department of Motor Vehicles and the Oregon State Police, in my discussions with them, share my desire to make some improvements in the present system, and I presume that they may be interested in offering their own testimony. But I would like to point out several important issues that arose during my discussions with them. I've already mentioned the fact that the DMV has pointed out that there's a hole in the present bill that needs to be plugged with an amendment requiring insurance up front. I think it is important to note also that the state police have advised me of their estimates that we might be looking at 7,000 citations in a biennium. That would be in the first biennium, because if the thing is effective, that number should go down. This would take about 1 hour each to process, and they have estimated a cost of about $106,800 in the value of the officer's time to process these vehicles. Another interesting unresolved problem that the state police would be stuck with, frankly, that they'd have to be dealing with in any case, would be the fact that in confiscating the vehicle, they would not be taking the driver into custody, and that person would be left afoot. Perhaps they might even, and this was pointed out to me, encounter a number of cases in which there's an entire family in the car in some remote location. I assume that they would have to figure out how to deal with it since the car is impounded. And since people are not in custody, they'd be free to do as they choose, or in a remote location. I'd rather expect that the police would offer to transport them to the next town if they so desired. As one of our colleagues said when I showed him the bill, this is a draconian measure. I don't quite consider it that, but in any case, we should also take note of the fact that given the class of people that are generally uninsured, it seems reasonable to assume that the value of the cars that we picked up will be low. Even so, if the committee desired, it would seem reasonable to consider assigning such funds as are required to the cost of the program. I don't have any problem with that if somebody feels like doing it. I don't delude myself into thinking this proposal will end all of the problems. As you can see, this is a thorny issue that has been worked on for quite some period of time. When I got interested in it and looked backward at some of the legislation and talked with Representative Fawbush, who has been picking at this for a number of sessions, introduced some legislation a ways back. It's a tough issue. But it does seem that looking back on those efforts and looking at the current situation, I think that my bill offers an important forward step. It may seem a bit draconian, as I said, but on the other hand, I suggest to you that the situation is such that the public is demanding action and will accept fairly stern measures that are contemplated in this bill. I understand that there are several other measures that have been filed also dealing with the subject. But while I think that mine is a good proposal and that we've reasonably worked it out, I encourage the committee to look at them all in the same broad context and seriously consider taking the kind of reasonably tough measures that are contemplated by this bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Representative Miller? Thank you. Ken Chichester, you get a chance to correct me.
Chichester.
Go ahead, if you'd state your name for the record.
Members of the committee, my name is Ken Chichester. I'm a lieutenant with the Oregon State Police, assigned to the patrol division at our general headquarters in Salem. I'm testifying in regards to this bill just because of some potential problems that we as an agency see with it if it becomes law. One concern with the bill is it does not clarify the process when a vehicle can be released to the registered owner. The bill states, and I quote, that it may be released to the registered owner of a vehicle upon presentation by the owner of proof that the vehicle is insured or that the owner is otherwise in compliance with the financial responsibility requirements of Chapter 806. The bill is not specific as to who the proof is presented to and what kind of proof is required. If proof has to be presented to the police agency that impounded the vehicles, problems could result, such as what would be acceptable proof. If the person complies with the above requirements and the proof is made to the Department of Motor Vehicles, a police agency could check on a computer to see if compliance has occurred, thus enabling release of the vehicle. Another potential problem is that an insurer would have to notify the Department of Motor Vehicles every time a person sold a vehicle, canceled a policy, or changed a policy. Due to the volume of notices, it appears there is a potential that individuals may have a car impounded by police when it is, in fact, properly insured. In 1986, the state police issued 7,119 citations for driving while uninsured. I'm going to deviate just slightly from my written testimony. It is estimated that an officer would be spending approximately 1 hour with each such instance in seizing a vehicle. Since the driver cannot be arrested for the violation, the officer would have to take additional time besides waiting for a tow truck, making arrangements for the transportation of the occupants of the vehicle. In many instances, this could involve giving the occupants a ride to a location or assistance. Since the state police work in rural locations, this could involve a considerable amount of time. Using the 7,119 citations issued as a base for vehicle seizures, a fiscal impact analysis indicates that for the biennium 87 to 89, there will be a cost of approximately $106,800 to the Department of State Police for additional time spent to enforce this law. This concludes my written prepared testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Miller.
Do you know how the figure $106,800 was arrived at, given the variables on the rural locations of officers and so forth?
Yes, Representative Miller. That was based on wages for a one-hour period of time for the 7,119 citations issued.
So it did not include the potential that it could require more time?
No. I think that's a very low figure. Like Representative Agron said, there are some areas in the state that we work that are rather remote. We have a potential problem with insurance liability, where people are allowed to ride in our vehicles only in the course of official duties, such as an arrest, a disabled motorist. There may be a potential just transporting people from point A to point B, where they can receive some assistance after their vehicle has in fact been impounded.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
If I may, I might offer another scenario that would cause a problem. If the vehicle that was in fact uninsured after we had stopped that for whatever traffic infraction was carrying perishable commodities or livestock, there is a dilemma as to whose responsibility, the custody of the livestock, the care and storage of them, or of the disposition of the perishable commodities until this procedure is carried through to the end.
Thank you. Carl Kruger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Carl Kruger, Driver Records Manager for the Motor Vehicles Division. House Bill 2766 would have a major impact upon the Motor Vehicles Division, particularly if the cancellation notice required by the bill also triggers action by the division under ORS 806.150 and .160. Those are the statutes that require the division to take further verification action leading up through suspension if the division has reason to believe that a person is driving uninsured. The division's original analysis of the bill is that if we received a cancellation notice from an insurance company, that would be reason to believe that a person was driving uninsured. The primary effect is to the driver services branch, but our vehicle services branch, the field services branch, and also our hearings branch would be affected to some degree. At the request of Representative Agrins, we met last week, and he indicated that it was not his intent that the division would be affected by 806.150 or .160. We would suggest, though, that if that's the case, that an amendment would be made to make that clear. House Bill 2766 would result in an increased workload for the division, and we presume the insurance industry, unless some type of automated notification system could be developed. And that's because we anticipate an increase of at least 216,000 notices of cancellation of insurance each year. Of those, we anticipate that a very high percentage, perhaps as much as 85 to 90%, will have insurance coverage or be eligible for exemption. In many cases, we believe that the cancellation notice will simply reflect that an owner has changed companies. That was our experience under the original mandatory auto liability law in 1978. That law required notice if a policy was canceled within 120 days of the original issue. We estimate an increase of 24,000 letters requesting proof of insurance coverage. Under Section 3, we also would be required to make a notation on the registration record of the vehicle that the vehicle is not insured or otherwise in compliance with financial responsibility requirements of Chapter 806. Section 4 then requires a police officer to impound a vehicle for a maximum of 90 days when the officer determines from division records that a motor vehicle is not insured or that the registered owner is not in compliance with financial responsibility requirements. For the last 10 years, Oregon has had a vehicle impoundment law for DWS and for second DUII at the discretion of the court, but we're unaware of that ever being used. If the registered owner does not claim the vehicle within 90 days, the vehicle may be disposed of under the procedures established in the abandoned vehicle laws in Chapter 819. As spoken to earlier, we did a profile of the uninsured driver, and the value of those vehicles would probably be so low based on our profile that little revenue would be derived from that action. And that concludes my testimony.
Are there any questions? Representative Spring?
Carl, I don't know if you've had a chance to report to us earlier, if there's any information that you can provide today or maybe later that would tell us how these provisions have actually been working that are provided in 806-150. You folks are asked to do a lot. I would hope it's more than just generating paperwork. Can you give us any sense of just whether or not you feel this statute or the implementation has really had any significant impact on the problem that I think we're all concerned about?
Representative Springer, we do follow those statutes with the random sample. And I don't have the figures here, but we feel that that did play an important part or was a good piece of legislation. The 5% figure, I might speak to the 5% figure that was mentioned earlier. I'm not sure how valid that figure was 10 years ago, whether it was a statistically valid figure. Our analysis seems to be that the uninsured rate is increasing and is somewhere at least 9 or 10%. It's doubtful that it was probably ever as low as 5%.
Mm-hmm. Have you folks done any kind of systematic evaluation or report back in terms of the number of notices you send out, the number that come back where there's reason to follow up, or is there some summary available that sort of would describe just how this is working?
Representative Springer, I believe our research analyst has done some work in that area, which I'll make sure that the committee gets whatever we have. Our main uninsured figure, the figure that we get for the uninsured driver, as spoken to earlier, is based totally on the accident. Mm-hmm. We verify each one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 2766? If not, I'll close the hearing on that bill and open the hearing on House Bill 2797, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Eldon Johnson, State Rep from District 51. And the bill before you is an effort to deal with a problem that wasn't perceived when the statute was established that restricted the access to a driver's license of a minor in possession of alcohol. And what we're trying to achieve here, and the copies of the testimony you have probably a better explanation than I'm able to give, it's an effort to stop the youngster who found themselves involved in a situation like this from paying and paying and paying, usually their parents paying for excessive insurance costs because of that being on their record when they then do become eligible for a driver's license. And so that's what we're looking to achieve. One of the letters comes from a couple in Representative Peterson's district and the other from a constituent of mine. I hope you'll give the proposal consideration because I think it's something that really needs to be changed. Questions?
Are there questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Carl Kluger?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Carl Kruger, Driver Records Manager for Motor Vehicles Division. The testimony I have today for 2797 and 2932 is nearly identical to that I gave the other day on 2587. I don't want to take your time unless you want me to go through that again. Would you?
Why don't you summarize
All right. What
your position is on the bill, Mr. Kruger?
Okay. House Bill 2932, House Bill 2797, in their current draft, require DMV to screen additional information regarding non-motor vehicle-related offenses before we give that to the public. Our position is that if the purpose of the bill is to prevent insurance companies from using these entries or denials for non-motor vehicle-related offenses, then why not just exclude them from the insurance statutes? The committee may wish to consider an amendment to limit court denials to only non-motor vehicle-related offenses. The bill allows police officers to have access to these non-motor vehicle-related denials or entries on our record. And as I stated the other day, the police officers get this information from the Law Enforcement Data System, which is referred to as LEDS. There's various users of that, of LEDS, other than just police officers. For us to restrict the use of LEDS within those groups who currently have access would be difficult, if not impossible. I would also request that the bill, that the emergency clause of the bill be deleted. If it goes further, we would need to coordinate with the courts, develop some forms, and need some time to do that.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you, Mr. Kruger. Candace Singer?
Members in the committee, my name is Candace Singer, and I'm a law clerk with the Juvenile Rights Project. My testimony is also the same as it was last week regarding House Bill 2587. We've made the same amendments also, and those were, one was to limit the court denials to those drug and alcohol offenses involving motor vehicles, and the second amendment was to give the judge discretion in imposing the penalty. The fact that there's so many bills presented about the problems in ORS 809-260 clearly shows that it is unfair and excessive. Last week I was asked to see if I could find some statistics regarding the number of children who were denied licenses because they had chosen to walk home rather than drive if they had something to drink. And I couldn't find any statistics on that, but as you can see from the written testimony, statistics compiled by the Division of Motor Vehicles shows that only 2% of all the denials the children were charged with either having an open container or drinking alcohol in their car. And that's, again, I just urge you to adopt our amendments.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2797? If not, we'll close the hearing on that bill.
No guidance. Do you want to go next? Should we take up 2867? We've got quite a list here.
Pardon the brief intermission. We're going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2867. Paul Snyder? I don't see him. Okay. Mike Baldwin? Frank Tullius?
I'm Frank Tullius. I represent the State of Oregon Corrections Division, Parole and Probation Section 4, Linn County. I'll make my testimony very brief. I would like to indicate support for this bill. In the county level, or their state or county, in regard to offender supervision, we do need resources. And we have had some experience based upon some funds that were acquired through grants and other funding projects. However, these tend to deplete. And in regard to the upper spectrum, I have a primary interest. In regard to the felony misdemeanor and supervision of those clients, the EHD, the electronic home detention, was one of the first programs brought about by such funding, and it's been very successful in Linn County, and I have no further information to offer unless there is a question.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dan Meter?
I don't print very well. It's Don Metter. Yes, I'm here to speak to in favor of 2867. You do have copies of my written testimony in front of you. I am from Linn County, and I am traffic safety coordinator for the county. I fully believe that we need something of this nature. We're going to have many of us are running out of funding from the federal level. Mike Baldwin, who was supposed to have spoke earlier, had to leave to go to a meeting in Eugene, and he represents NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Agency, and he did leave written testimony for you on that. But we are running out of funding, in the fact that the federal funding is lowering or has a limit of 3 years on it. Most of us are getting very, very close to that limit. We have to my knowledge at this time, there is no state money being used for local traffic safety programs. The monies which are currently used, such as for the intoxicated driver fund, and that go for other things. So everything, including the Oregon County Safety Commission itself, is funded primarily by federal funds. I think as far as our programs, I believe it's time for the state to say, yes, we need to be involved. That's all that I have. We'd be glad to answer any questions.
Could you describe your programs and the number of people they impact?
Okay, we are, of course, our program itself, there are our county level programs going on right now in six counties. Washington County, Multnomah County, Clackamas County, Linn County, Lane County, and Klamath County. So if you add up all the number of people in those counties, there's an awful lot of them. Our county, of course, is 89,000 people. We are impacting primarily on young people right now. We're doing a lot of work in the grade school level. We've just implemented a new program to teach kindergarten through second graders traffic safety procedures, signs, and so on. So there's a large majority, I would say, of the population of the state of Oregon is impacted by local traffic safety programs.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Was Mr. Mayor? Is that
Metter, yes.